Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, peas. Just when you thought you were going to get rid of us,
we're back. It's our new idea after 4.5 years to do a summer series.
It is. They're not new episodes because we are extremely mediocre, as you are aware, and we are human beings and we are having a holiday like everyone else in Australia. But we thought you might still like to hear some of our favourite episodes.
So we've chosen a few that we know people really enjoyed at the time and you might have missed them. So please enjoy.
Enjoy them. And if you didn't miss them, you can
listen to them again.
I love rewatching things.
Same.
So I love re-listening. It's comforting. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Enjoy and we'll see you soon.
Bye. We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents of children with disability. And today we're speaking to a media professional who's disrupting stereotypes, challenging and changing representations in pop culture.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and sometimes the occasional F word. So you may not want your children to listen. You may choose to use headphones or earbuds or AirPods or whatever they're called. And that's just the way it is. That's why we got the little E, baby.
That's right.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Pod bar time.
Yes, here we are.
I know. It's starting to feel like a routine now that we're back for the year.
Yeah.
So it's weird because today we're recording on a – this week we're recording on a different day. Throwing my whole week out.
Me too. And the kids are like, what? Podcast on a Thursday?
I know.
It's like, yep. What?
It's only because of lockdown we had the luxury of having a day.
Yes, when you realise that.
Yeah, and now we're like, no, we're going to try and cling on to that.
Yeah, we were able to have a routine because we couldn't do anything.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the work boys are working, but I am, well, I suppose I'm working.
Yeah, we are.
I'm not in a truck.
So yeah, true. That's nice. True. True.
Would you like to introduce our guest?
Well, today we have a beautiful person that has been – we met through our Instagram page and seeing all her work through Instagram. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lisa Cox. I'm in Brisbane at the moment. I'm a media professional, speaker, writer and disability advocate, I suppose.
Yes.
Awesome hats.
Thank you. Good of everything.
Yeah. Well, good on you. Could you tell us about some music that you love to listen to, either in the good times or the tricky times?
Sure. I must say I'm fairly partial to a bit of Dubdorf and don't mind the odd bit of techno. So
yeah.
I'm sort of sneaky sound system, Daft Punk.
Oh, yes.
And it's in my ears at the gym.
Yeah.
If I'm listening to sort of 90s classics like Salt and Pepper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In downtimes, if I'm not listening to a podcast, I love just having bright, chubby people talking in my ear instead of music. But yeah, I'll put the same sorts of things on. Not really into the sad, somber music because that just makes me feel worse.
Yes, yes, yep. Yes. Yep.
I remember when I went to my psychologist when the kids were little, and she was like, "You just have to get all of that off your iPod." That was back in the day.
Yeah.
You can't, don't have that music, don't even have access to it, which is, you know, Spotify now you do. But she was like, if you just have happy music, why do you need to listen to
no lamenting
that make you
songs.
Cry?
Yeah.
Country music. It's all about my dog left me.
That's
sorry,
true.
I love it, but oh, God, country music.
I know. Yes. I know. Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah.
It's very lamenting.
It is
lamenting. I think their lives were hard.
I know, fair enough.
So it reflected their lives. And our next question, did you win any awards at school?
Oh, God, I really feel like I'm resting on my laurels here. This was so long ago. Yeah, I did. Some of them were academic, but a lot of them were sporting as well. So I played a ton of sport. I have disabilities now that didn't back then. So, yeah, bit of both, and was really proud of them at the time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What was it? What was your favourite sport, or what?
Volleyball. I was a mad keen volleyballer. So I was terrible when I started and just all arms and legs and lanky. But by the end of it, I was captain in the national. Captain in women's team at nationals.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I just love that. I think I love the routine and the discipline and all those things that come with team sport and competitive sport.
Yes, yes. What about my favourite game, Newcombe? Did you play that?
I have no idea what that is.
It's volleyball without you're allowed to catch the ball and then you can throw it over.
I'm with you now, yeah.
Right. I don't know why that was called that, but I loved that because you could catch it and then you could throw it over instead of having to spike it or, you know. Yeah.
Sort of takes the skill away.
Yeah, but maybe that was sort of what we learnt first and then we played volleyball. I don't know, but I have fond memories of playing Newcombe.
Oh, never heard of it.
Now what it is, but yeah, kind of not the same.
No, it's not the same. Oh dear. Okay, and can you tell us why you're a member of the P Tribe?
Yeah, sure. Well, as I mentioned before, I didn't have disabilities growing up and I don't have kids with disabilities, but I'm now an adult with disabilities that I acquired in my early 20s. So pull my parents through living hell. Mm. And I'm hoping that some peas in this tribe might be able to help me with what I'm trying to do around making disability more visible in mainstream popular culture and things like that.
Yes, of course.
We're on board
the
with that.
Peas are already on board.
Yep, 100%. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what happened, what was happening at the time, how old you were? You tell us in your words.
Yeah, to I suppose backtrack a little bit. I was living in Melbourne. Yeah. I was 24. I'd done what a lot of people my age had done, been to uni, got my degrees, moved interstate for work. Mm. I was at Melbourne Airport one morning and without any warning had a brain hemorrhage, stroke. So I spent the next 3 weeks, 3 weeks in a coma, still on life support. And over a year in hospital.
Oh,
after
my
that.
Gosh.
Lisa.
It was fun. Oh. And then that's what I meant by putting my parents through a living hell, because at the time they were told, come to Melbourne, we don't know if Lisa will be alive in the morning.
Oh.
And then every day they'd arrive at my hospital bed not knowing if I'd be there and hear the machines beeping. I'm like, okay, cool, she's breathing.
Oh.
So during that first year, my left leg, all of my right toes, and 9 of my fingertips were amputated. I had, I've had heart surgery twice, a total hip replacement. All the things that happen to old ladies at age were happening to me at 25, 27. Mm. And they're all of the, I suppose, the visible disabilities and scars and things you can see, but there's a lot going on with my brain injury. So I'm over 25% blind. Yeah. Chronic pain, chronic fatigue, clinically diagnosed anxiety, PTSD, things like that. Far more challenging on my life than a wheelchair or a prosthetic leg. And
really? Yeah. Interesting.
Do you think that's because other people can't see it?
Partially. I think partially. And I've spoke to a friend of mine who also has a brain injury, except he's walking around with nothing apart from a small scar on his neck like I have. And we joked about the fact that I'm quote unquote lucky to have a wheelchair, because people don't ask twice, or people don't make as, I mean, they still make a shit ton of assumptions.
Oh, yes.
Those sorts of things. But I don't want to say they expect it of me, but they don't sort of look at me as strangely as they say, what the hell is wrong with you? Mm. If I'm doing something, because the wheelchair say, oh, she's disabled, oh, we get it.
It's funny how we're just so obsessed with everybody reflecting what we think is average or normal. So, and a lot of us really face that
from the outside when they watch people treating our kids a certain way, especially if their disabilities are invisible. And you just think, why do we make an assumption the minute we see someone that they are the same as us in some way? You know, like just because someone may be hearing impaired or speech impaired or have sensory issues, and no, there's no allowance given for anyone.
No.
I don't know how we change that. That would be amazing.
Well, we just got to keep talking.
Yeah.
That's all we're going to do.
Coming in this from a non-parent point of view, I've seen a lot more conversations and discourse starting around these sorts of things. So there is more awareness with the general public to just maybe not assume, but you're 100% right, just keep talking and keep bringing attention to the exactly what we're talking about. Not everyone is like you.
No.
Which is makes life more interesting.
Well, it sure does.
So when you were in hospital, your parents were living in Brisbane at the time?
They were. My mum, dad, sister and brother, both younger a little bit, were all living in Brisbane, and I was in Melbourne Hospital. So they all flew down to Melbourne as fast as they could and then lived out of suitcases for 2 months, and I was sleeping on the hospital floor.
Yeah.
And then, I finally came off life support, and my parents were told they might have to turn it off at first.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
Eventually I came off the life support, and they realised I'd have to be in hospital for quite some time, and they decided Brisbane would be the best place for me since my family was here. And so I got to, I don't remember any of this, but they put me in an ambulance and came back to Brisbane.
Oh, thank goodness.
So can you remember being in hospital in Melbourne?
Not a single bit. There are memories, and I don't know if they're actual memories or just crap that I've just come up with myself.
Yeah. It's hard to work that out, yeah.
So can you remember being at Melbourne Airport?
No, I have amnesia before and after the stroke, so I don't remember the first few months in hospital, and even my memory before the stroke is really compromised. So again, there are sort of memories, but I don't know if they're real or not. So I know I was in Melbourne Airport for work a couple of years ago, and I went into this particular area of the airport. I'm like, oh my God, this is where it happened.
Yes.
And it just brought a heap of memories and feelings, but I don't know if it was or not. So who knows? The brain's a funny old thing.
It really, really is.
Really is. And so then you ended up in Brisbane, and how long were you in hospital up there?
I was already two months and then another 10 and a bit.
Oh, my goodness.
All up, that first year was over a year.
That is a long time.
My anniversary was only 2 days ago, the 22nd of February. So
right, that's when you had your stroke.
That's right. That's my anniversary.
Yeah, well, you remember it. Yeah.
I don't remember it at all. I just know that.
You know that.
No, I know, but I mean, it's an important date.
Oh, for sure.
That's what
yeah.
I mean. Yeah.
So it's my sweet 16th, or it was my sweet 16th, and I figure I'm no longer 40. I'll just live like I'm still having my 21st.
Yeah.
Why not?
What happened in hospital over those 10 months? That's a lot to talk about. But what stands out to you? What were the times that were hard? What were the times that were made easier? Or
oh, geez, that's a really big, loaded question. Yeah. I was talking about. I'm trying to, I suppose, simplify it. It wasn't all sunshine and roses and optimism and excellence, and I was on a lot of medication at the same time. So I know one memory I have, or don't have the first memory. So my left leg had to be amputated below the knee. My family told me that, and I cried my eyes out, woke up the next morning, no recollection whatsoever, just could not remember. So obviously brain injury, no memory. So my family decided, let's not tell her every day. It'll be like Groundhog Day, and just at her. They left it until I was, I suppose, retaining memories. They told me, and I just lost my shit again and was really, really, really upset. Until till finally I met another amputee who was about my age, and she just walked into the room and I thought, this bitch, what does she know about amputations? Anyway, she sat down and explained to me that she had both legs amputated, one arm and her other hand looked like mine with no fingertips. Mm. And she just casually explained how she'd done some study, just come back from Europe, was dating. I thought, holy crap, this someone who's just getting on with life. And I suppose, and this is my fault as just as much as anybody else's, but all I had in my head were the stereotypes about disability that I'd been fed through years of the culture. That I'm going to be terrible, I'm going to be miserable, it's just the worst imaginable thing that can happen. Turns out it's not.
Yes.
But that's all I had in my head. So I had a few times like that where meeting people like that really changed it for me. And that's one reason why I encourage other people to as well share their stories, not in an inspirational and porn kind of way.
No.
That's right.
It is really important for those of us, and even parents who have a child with a disability, to have that, and I don't want to use the word role model, but someone who they can look to and go, okay, that's not the representation that the media is giving me.
No, that's right.
And even the hospital or the doctors and professionals, and I know it's their job to sort of give you that worst case scenario and this and this and this, but I think that the doctors need to sort of hang out with real estate agents for a little bit, because real estate agents can put a positive spin on anything.
Absolutely.
There is no toilet in this toilet room, but
the most amazing thing is you can now create this to be the oasis that you've always wanted the toilet to be. And you're just like, they can talk. So I think there needs to be a little bit of a mesh.
Oh, there does. You're right.
Hilarious. I've never heard that, but you were absolutely 100% correct.
Yes.
Because whether I was speaking to a doctor or a friend over coffee, I don't like sugar-coated optimism. I like to be told the hard truth.
Yes.
Even if it sucks and hurts a bit. But that's just personally how I prefer to communicate. Yes. But, there are certainly times when a little bit of optimism and hope doesn't go astray. My dad, for example, is the epitome of optimism. And when I was first told that all of my fingertips were going to be amputated, he was like, "Oh, but you get to keep one." No. he was so excited. having those people around me was also good, because I suppose I had the doctors at one end telling me the brutal truth, which is great, and then I had Dad on the other side of the fence celebrating the fact that I would get to keep one fingertip.
Yep.
I mean, Dad's.
Oh, that's, no. They would have been in pain, and he just, mine would say silly stuff too. He'd grab my daughter's hand when it was tightly in a fist, and he'd be like, see, I can open her fingers, I can open it. I was like, yeah, but she can't.
Yeah.
No.
But they want to be there and supportive.
They want to help or try and fix things.
And you'd put him through hell, no fault of your own.
Through both of my parents, living hell. I've said before that, when something happens to me, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
When something happens to somebody else, be it my husband or my parents and sister-in-law, I just crumble in a heap.
Yep.
And I'm better dealing with things when they happen to me. But if the roles has been reversed and something had happened to a loved one, then I certainly would not have handled it the same way.
No.
Well,
we
all just try our best.
Yeah,
they were probably just so happy you're alive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a horrible plane flight. I know, because my father did pass away from a stroke, but he was older. But I had to fly to the UK, and on that plane, which is a long time, I was like, is he going to be alive when I get there? And he was, but he couldn't speak or anything. But it's no in the air, you can't communicate with anyone, so no one can text you and say it's fine. So your poor parents.
Mm.
Yeah, I know, and this is 16 years ago, so pre all the social media.
Yes.
And I think Facebook was just
happening. Yeah.
So, you know, I couldn't communicate and say, oh, they could probably text on the really old phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever they are.
Yeah, A-A-A-B-B-B.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that community support.
No.
Yeah, so just unimaginably shit.
Yes, and they were in a different city.
What happened to your, like, your friends? Were they on board? Were they by your side? Did people come and go?
Some of them hung around, but very few did, to be honest. Mm. And yeah, that sucked at the time, but it's probably been a blessing in disguise, because I've always taken the opinion that true friends are there in good times and bad times.
Mm. Yeah, so
they probably weren't real. Decent friends to begin with, and if they'd fallen off the wagon when something happened then it's probably a good chance they would have fallen off the wagon if I hadn't got sick.
Yes.
If I got married, or if something else great happened in years to come, or something really horrible.
Can you remember when your leg was amputated?
May
30th. May 30th.
I only remember that date because it's also a friend's birthday. Uh-huh. yes, I do. And I do remember that day. I'd been retaining my memories by then. So could remember all of that. My foot was septic at the time. So I was, it needs to go. It was poisoning my body, basically. Mm. So I was having these really, really hot flashes. I don't know what to call them.
Yeah.
I had to be freezing cold, and Dad would pull the blankets on me, and then it was just hot and cold, hot and cold. So it really was not a good thing to have attached. But no. It absolutely needed to happen.
So can you explain why, from having a stroke or aneurysm, that your limb needed to be amputated?
Yeah, sure. So, because obviously there's lots of stroke victims who don't have amputations, but what happened with me, I had my stroke and it sort of all snowballed. Then all my organs shut down, so every single one I was being kept alive by machines. Mm. And when all my organs shut down, they put me on some medication, which in my non-medical explanation, brought all the blood back from my vital organs, from my extremities, my hands and feet, in my vital organs. So my heart and liver and kidneys all had blood flow. But that meant that all my extremities, hands, feet, even my nose, all turned black and had to be chopped off. Fortunately, I got to keep my nose.
Mm.
But in the early days, my arms and legs were all blotchy black. So the fact that I only lost toes and fingertips and one leg, that's pretty awesome, because originally it looked like all four limbs would go and things. So I'm pretty stoked that it is what it is, even though it'd still be nice to have legs sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I think it would be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And when you came home from hospital, did you move back in with your parents?
I sure did, yep. Moved back home with mum and dad, and I was 25 by then. So hospital was a shock to the system, but geez, moving back home with mum and dad. I loved them, but that was a shock to the system as well.
I bet.
Not having the same independence and ability as so. And understandably they were worried about me. So I drink a lot of coffee, and I wanted to just be able to do the basics, like make myself a cup of coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
Dad insisted that I wear a plastic apron so I wouldn't pour boiling water on myself. Things like that. So I had to, I suppose, prove myself in some ways that I was capable of being left alone. They wanted me to get a, what are they called? You know, those emergency alarms?
Yes, yes.
Get to wear it, yeah.
Yep.
They wanted to get one of those, but I was a bit stubborn. I'm like, no, I can do it. So it took a few months before they'd leave me leave me alone and those sorts of things, but they were just amazing. So
it must have been enormous. I can't even imagine what to ask you in terms of what, how you were coping with all of that.
I was sad and confused, but at the same time, I was so grateful to be alive.
Yes.
Holy shit, this, how lucky was I, because I wasn't supposed to be here. I wasn't expected to be here. So everything, whether it was making a cup of coffee for myself or it was such a joy. I'm like, look at me, I'm doing this.
And yeah. You're coming back to your new normal.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So
yeah.
I suppose I was relearning so many tasks over again in the early days back in hospital.
Yes.
Cooking, feeding, brushing my own teeth, learning to do all of that again. But then as I got out of hospital, just simple things like being able to stand at the kitchen bench.
Yeah.
And that was my milestone. I know you guys talk a lot about milestones. In I had some crazy ass milestones.
Oh, yes. Tell us some of them. Yes. Tell us.
Even just being able to take myself to the loo,
yes, and
shower myself,
yep,
really basic stuff like that. I had to go back into hospital for more surgery on my amputated toes. My foot wasn't healing properly. And so every morning I'd have to have a shower with a Kmart bag wrapped around my waterproof, and just, yeah, some really, really basic stuff that I was kind of stubbornly determined. I knew I couldn't do everything again.
Yeah.
But I was just determined to have a certain level of independence. So back in the early days, I was like, I'm going to walk again. This is it. I'm going to walk.
Yep.
And I'm not going to be in a wheelchair. I'm going to walk. So I spent all day in a hospital walking up and down the hospital wards with one of those big walking frames.
Yep.
And then when I came home from hospital, Dad and I, every afternoon, we'd go down to the park, the local cricket pitch, and on a little wheelie walker, like the old ladies at the house have. It had taken me about an hour to walk a lap of the cricket field, and that was my mindset. I'm going to walk again.
Yeah.
Yes.
To the point where I'm like, this is bullshit. What am I doing? I was just, my entire life was rehab.
Yeah.
I thought, why don't I just be okay with being in a chair? Because I wasn't safe. This is the other thing. I wasn't safe to do any of this walking.
Right.
Dad hovering a meter away for the entire trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, trip the cricket oval. There was no independence, no freedom. I thought, screw this. So now I'm in a wheelchair and I, when I can, and there's not COVID, go everywhere around the world.
Yes.
It is the best. So much freedom and so much independence. And I don't know what I was thinking when I first thought, no, I can't be in a wheelchair. And
I think a lot of parents will probably relate to that in when they have a child with maybe cerebral palsy and the main drive is to get them to walk, and then that accepting of moving to a wheelchair is a really big moment. And so I think our peers will understand that from their perspective.
Yeah, quality of life. I mean, different for everyone. I don't want to speak for everyone, but my quality of life just skyrocketed the minute I changed that mindset of the only way to live is to walk. To, you know what, I'm loving life on four wheels.
Yeah.
So be it.
I know. And I suppose, it's a little bit better now, but growing up there was no representation of people living happy lives in wheelchairs.
That's right.
They'd roll them out at charity days and, everyone was supposed to feel sad that this person, I remember having mum and dad had like a little tin on the bench that you put your coins in, and it had a child in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah.
What were we giving money to that child?
And also they weren't as, I can't speak from experience with the wheelchairs, but they look to me like they've improved.
Yeah, they're much better.
Sure. And I've only had mine for 16 years, but even in that short amount of time, when I think of the clunky ones that I had in the early days to now, it's, massive changes.
Yeah. Yep. And so you were pre-NDIS? So you've got some experience with having a disability before NDIS, and are you on it now?
I certainly am. Yeah. I was working with the NDIS very
awesome.
Briefly down Parliament House, met Julia Gillard.
Yeah, great.
Before it all happened.
Yeah.
So I saw a little bit of the happenings behind the scenes as well. But, yeah, I'm on the NDIS now.
Yeah. I probably just wanted to go back a bit because I've jumped onto that with the NDIS. Tell us a little bit about how did you, so once you made the move to the wheelchair, then was there then a moment when you're like, I want to get back to working. I want to reclaim some of that.
Oh, I was, my background was, I was a copywriter in advertising agencies. So right. I had degrees in media, business communications and media.
Ah.
And I'd sit there in hospital, watch the television screen and just rewrite the scripts in my head. So part of my job was writing TV scripts or magazine copy or something like that. And in my naive opinion, I was like, oh, I'm just in a wheelchair. That's okay. So we talk about able-bodied people making assumptions and those sorts of things, but I fooled myself. I didn't realise that a brain injury was what it was, basically.
Yeah.
So I went back into an advertising agency, started working, my ads were getting approved by clients and getting produced and loved it. But then I was like, oh, hang on, I can't quite work like I used to.
Yes.
And then I'm like, oh, this brain injury thing, it's actually a thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, it took me a while to realise that. So it was only then that I started looking at the industry and the other industries in probably culture, media and fashion, everything, I suppose, that's not representing disability, and thought, I'm in a fairly unique position.
Yes.
Let me do something about this.
Yes.
So, I'm held, don't I?
Yeah, amazing. So you've got a huge social media presence. Has that evolved, or did you like go hard and decide to really smash it?
It's definitely evolved. If you scroll back for about 5 or 6 years, see me posting once a month somewhere.
Yeah.
Photos of my coffee cup or something.
Yeah, we all did that. Got that.
there's a history there. So it's only been in the last few years, I suppose, I've really got a bit clearer and found connected with people who have similar views and ideas. Maybe we bounce off each other about how to do things better and other avenues that can take that message down. So it's evolved more in the last few years than it was 6 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, social media. I know it can be really bad.
Yeah, we do.
But
it can be bullshit. But for someone with disability, whether you have one or you've got a shot, it's I cannot imagine my life without it, because I can't get out and about now.
Yeah. Mm.
That's my social connection a lot of the time.
That's what I was going to ask. Did you meet people? Was there Facebook groups? How did you meet other people similarly?
Yeah, so I met some people on Facebook groups and things like that. Connected with people through social media. One thing I will add that for the piece as well, and I've mentioned this before in other presentations, that social media is bloody brilliant, but it can also be really, really damaging sometimes, especially in the disability sector.
Mm.
There's some people there who probably need, and I don't want to sound horrible and generalise, probably need to be doing some more work, speaking to a professional. And you know how there's that quote about you're the equivalent or you're the average of the 5 people you surround yourself with?
Yes.
So social media, if you're in a Facebook group where anyone is doing is bitching and moaning, and it's justified so much of the time, but these really, really angry people, and that's going to drag you down over time if that's all you're feeding yourself.
So true.
It's so true.
I'm want to see that anger and everything's not justified because so often it is.
Yes.
Yes, it is. And there are real moments for it. And sometimes, sadly, it promotes change, you know.
Yes.
But there, you can't live like that, and you can't, you know. I get outraged, and I'll see something on TV, and I'll email someone, or I'll, you know, call Mandy or whatever. But sometimes you then have to let that go, because otherwise, I just become that.
Yeah.
I don't want my kids to think that I'm angry all the time because of how awesome they are.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so yeah, that's very true, very, very true.
So tell us some of the main parts of your work.
The main, like I said, I wear a lot of different hats, but as a writer by trade, so I still write for media and things like that, but doing work in disability advocacy, finding a way to, I suppose, bring together my media background and my lived experience in disability. So I've spoken to a lot of brands and businesses who try and be maybe inclusive or represent disability, but there's no one there in the marketing department or writing the ads with the copy who has that lived experience and can understand the nuances of not turning something into inspirational porn or so I've been working a bit with brands, businesses, even journalists, teaching them how to do things better. And that comes back to them not just being bitter and angry and bitching about it on Twitter. Because I try to think about my advocacy in that, how would I have liked to have been spoken to as a 24-year-old copywriter in an advertising agency who wanted to be diverse and inclusive, but just didn't have the skill set, the language.
That's right.
Out, basically. And I certainly wouldn't want to have been abused on Twitter, even though I wasn't around then.
Yeah.
But I really needed someone to go, listen, this is how to do it. This is what to include in your script or not include. And so that's the approach that I try to take these days.
It's the calling in.
The calling in instead of calling out.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. It's really.
It's life-changing.
It is life-changing.
Because we all do things
every
inadvertently
day
that hurt people.
Every day.
You know, because we
have unintentionally all the time.
Yes.
All the time. And I don't know that that's wrong unless someone, and I'll say calls me out, but calls me out nicely.
Yeah.
Flies into my DMs and says, you know, that was a bad idea or something. Mm. I don't go out of my way to be an asshole.
No.
And that, in working with journalists in the past, both as someone who's writing and as a subject matter, they don't go out of their way to be complete assholes.
No, they don't.
They don't know. So, and that's fair enough. I've been there. I can see both sides of the coin.
That's true. And there are people who are just assholes. They're always going to be assholes. We don't have to worry about them. Do you know what I mean? They don't matter. You have to ignore them. That's the ridiculous messages that you just delete straight away and you're like, whatever. So, And the rest of the people, I like to think most people are good.
Yeah.
No, I go in with that mindset that most people do mean well and everyone has more going on than Instagram or something.
Yes, very true.
If they are having, talking shit, then I think they might have something going on in their own life as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, well, that's,
There's triggers everywhere.
There really is. Yeah.
Tell us about, did you moved out of home?
I did.
Yeah, what was that like? Where did you move? What was the house like?
I only moved 5 minutes away to an apartment, so still had to stay close to mum and dad and close to the hospital. But I was talking about 80 years older. You need to live close to a hospital.
Hospital. No, I will never move away from the Royal Children's until we're not there. So I understand that. Yep.
So, close enough for mum to come around every day.
Yes.
As it turned out, the apartment was awesome for me to get my wheelchair around and be 100% independent, but I wanted to be close to a gym because that was, again, going back all those years, I'm going to walk again. I just have to go to the gym.
Yes.
But because I'm a bit piss weak and my arms are voided of muscle, mum still had to pick me up every single morning and drive me 500 metres to the gym.
Yes.
Across the road. So, yeah, I lived there for a number of years.
She wouldn't have minded that. She would be like that. She would be happy to see you every day probably.
She didn't mind. I must add, my parents never once made me feel like a burden, even though I did that through no fault of theirs. They were nothing but awesome.
No. Because you wouldn't have been a burden. They're
no,
so
they love you.
Bloody glad you lived.
Yes.
Yes. I have no doubt that I was. Yeah,
but it doesn't matter because it just the love comes first.
Yeah, love. Love cancels out burden.
Yeah, it does.
To anyone out there with which all your listeners are with disabled children, you fucking rock. Seriously.
Oh.
As I said before, if this happened to somebody else, I'd be a mess. If it happened to me, I'm okay. So I have so much love and respect and admiration for my parents and parents of all children with disabilities, whether they're acquired or something they're born with, because you do a fucking fantastic job.
That's nice.
Thank you.
The peas will be glad to hear it.
Yeah, they will. We don't need any pumping up, but the peas do.
Yeah.
Well, there's people in all different situations
there really is.
There's days where it's tough.
Might be able to say it or express it.
Yeah.
Whatever even, but know that they are grateful as fuck for what you were doing, even though you mightn't, you know, you're doing something for the 10th time that day. And
know
that even if they can't say it the right way, that they really are grateful.
Yeah. My daughter will say thank you.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. But they're also teenagers.
But
so.
This morning I gave her a kiss when she was out the door and she said, I farted at the same time I kissed you. I said, thanks. Goodbye. So funny. Oh, dear.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so you moved out. You're in your own place.
And then I met my husband.
Yeah.
So went back on the dating scene and that was shit.
Tell us.
Yeah.
There were some nice guys, but there were also a lot of assholes out there. So different sorts of people, and I suppose I was lucky in that I had a friend with disabilities who'd given me a few warnings about look out for this sort of guy. The ambulance chasers was what she called them, and the guys who were going to be your knight in shining armor and save you from a miserable life of disability and swoop on in. And
no thanks.
Yeah, actually, I met a few of them.
Yeah.
met my husband and then lived apart for quite some time, and then decided that we wanted to live together, and the rest is history. So.
And he works outside the home. In Melbourne, no one works outside the home, but
he does. He works in the city. So I'm mostly home, working from home, but I can't go out for meetings and things like that. So.
Yeah. But you used to travel a lot for work pre-COVID?
Mainly in the I'll probably travel more. Pre-COVID, I used to work in advertising agencies, but pre-COVID I was travelling quite a bit.
Yeah.
Could be meetings or speaking or something else.
And how did COVID affect you?
I know it's been absolutely bullshit for some people, and I almost feel bad for saying this, but...
Oh, you say your truth.
I'll be fine.
Okay.
My life is no different
from
what it's been for the last 16 years.
That's what a lot of our peas said.
Yeah. My gym closed down and the coffee shop closed down, and they were my first world problems. I think that if there's one silver lining in COVID, it's that people are finally understanding how shit isolation is.
Yes.
And I wrote a piece about this for Canberra Times, and about the lack of representation, not just for people in the disability sector, but whether it's a new mum at home or a mother of a disabled child, and even migrants and people like that, we're not hearing their voices in all of the discourse about COVID. We're only hearing from, and I'll generalise again, sort of white middle class journalists. And it's sort of this one view of COVID, but we can learn so much from people who have that lived experience. Like I'd love to hear from a new migrant, for example. They got through months and years of isolation and just being by themselves at home. And isolation was something that I'd had a bit of experience with, because one of the issues that I had in hospital, it's called MRSA. It's kind of like my non-medical opinion, like a super bug, a really, really bad bug.
Yeah.
So I was in an isolation ward for certain parts of that, and it was just me in a room with four walls. And this is before smartphones, so I spend the day scrolling on Instagram. But I was in there for weeks and learning how to overcome isolation. And it wasn't just once. There were multiple times I was in the isolation ward. So as far as I'm concerned, COVID's just been a lot easier for me. I know it's been horrible for a lot of people, and I've been very, very fortunate here in Brisbane. But it has certainly brought, I suppose, front empathy to people who I'd previously bitch and moan about isolation and sort of get the raised eyebrows of, what are you talking about? Now they're starting to
get a taste of it.
It's a horrible, horrible way for it to happen, but it is what it is.
It is. And I think, you know, I remember when I was just home with the kids when they were little, and I wasn't at that point working, and people saying, oh, I'd give anything to just be able to be home. Well, not the same as isolation. You're like, no, actually, I'm just really lonely and I don't like being, you know, like, so now once people have had the lived experience of being home for 6 months, I think there's a lot more empathy.
Can you tell us a little bit about your role in fashion?
Sure. So that's something I've been doing a bit more of it. So I'm only pausing because it feels a bit funny sometimes. So, I'm a model.
Yeah. Oh, no, you tell us. It. Tell us.
I didn't go to uni to become a model. But, I suppose my core focus has been on changing representations in mainstream popular culture.
Yes.
I'm not in politics or government or anything like that. Can't change policy. So I looked at all the areas of pop culture that I can influence or have an impact on or do something with, and fashion was one of them. I sat down with a girlfriend one day and went, why do we never see wheelchairs?
Yes.
Being representative of all disabilities.
Yes.
But we never see disability. I'm like, red carpets, catwalks, and we came up with a few ideas and then just went, right, let's do it. Let's get on those. So,
awesome.
Just been doing some modelling, doing some runway shows and photo shoots for both inclusive fashion, so fashion that's designed specifically for people with disabilities, but also advocating for mainstream brands to use disabled people in their advertising and communicate to us in their advertising in some way, because I can't walk but I can chop and my credit card works.
Yes, of course.
I want to spend those dollars with brands and businesses that speak to me, represent me. Marketing 101.
It's so obvious. Hurry up.
Not just me, but my sister and brother and friends. There's millions of us out there. So it's I try to come at it as both a social justice, moral morally responsible thing to do, but it's also bloody good business.
Yes, it is.
Big market share out there.
Yes.
At least 20% people with disability, plus their family, friends, carers, who are just waiting for someone to show up, waiting for a brand to recognise that or value their dollar.
Yeah.
The disability dollar.
I remember I'm friends with Emily Pryor's mum, and she has cerebral palsy, a little bit younger than my twins. But I remember she was up in Target on a big banner with her AFOs, and I took my girls in and I said, look, look at those AFOs. I could cry. Look at those AFOs that you've got on your legs that no one else wears in our community. Mm. And look at her up there in Target where we go every day.
Mm.
It was just, it's incredible, and hurry up, world. More and more and more. Come on.
Target has done some amazing work. I've seen a few things through my Instagram feed. That's the other thing. When businesses or brands do something great like that, they don't have to spend millions of dollars patting themselves on the back and doing another campaign to say, hey, look how good are we.
Yeah, no, no.
Like myself and you guys and other people. I saw something on Dylan Alcott's feed recently. We'll promote it for you.
Yes.
I will yell and scream and make sure everybody sees that bloody ad with the girl with the AFOs or whatever it is.
Yeah, yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And I think also to me, even if you don't live with a disability or with anyone in your life with a disability, you see it and you're like, oh, yeah, that's more of a representation of what the world is. I'll shop there because they're actually just – that's for everybody.
It's like the inclusive schools. You know, we've had peas ring up and say, I've asked specifically how many kids with disabilities at this school. I want my kid to go to one.
Yeah. It's like when fashion, you know, stops at a size 14 and a lot of Australian women, me included, are bigger than that. And so then you're like, well, you're losing all that money.
I know, it's so obvious.
And we're not allowed to be nude.
when it comes to fashion, I suppose diversity, it's been on the agenda for a little while, but it's largely been around size diversity and color diversity. Once I was interviewing designers on a red carpet of a fashion show, and they were all talking about, oh, we're so diverse, our collection is so diverse, and puffing out their chests, and we're all proud of themselves. So I was like, yay, let's see this. And while, you know, it was great to see plus size models and models with different ethnicities and skin tones and things, there wasn't 1 ounce of disability. Disability. And I've said before that disability is the least palatable form of diversity. So everyone's getting on board now with, oh, we need whether it's plus size or someone of a different colour.
Yes.
But disability still, especially in the fashion industry, will not make any visibility.
Yeah.
Will not get any.
Yeah.
The least palatable.
It's so true.
Oh.
But we think the most palatable.
We do. That's right.
We just think people are people, but anyway.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Oh, you're doing amazing work.
Yeah, you really are. We'll tell our peas to follow you on Insta.
Yeah.
We'll put it all in the show notes.
Were you meant to go to New York Fashion Week or did you get there?
Bit of both.
Okay.
I virtually got there. So I was supposed to be going over.
Oh.
And that was pretty exciting, you know, Fashion Week to be.
Yes.
But, of course, nobody could go anywhere. I couldn't even go down to the cafe at the time.
Oh, disappointing.
Yeah, virtually I went over there. And a couple of months before that I was supposed to go to Philadelphia for another runway show. And so that was bloody COVID.
Yes.
That was fun as well, but luckily I got to do things like Mercedes-Benz runways and panels and things like that just here in Brisbane. Mm. But New York Fashion Week, unfortunately, couldn't get over.
Oh, I hope you get to do that again.
Come on, vaccine work.
Yeah. How do you cope with traveling? How do you manage that?
I'm not awesome. So I have a pressure injury.
Mm.
I get if anyone has any medical background, it was a stage 4 pressure injury on my sacrum.
Mm.
I basically got that from lying flat in the bed on my swap for 2 months.
Mm.
And that still today causes me more pain than, than most things. Even now when I go in and see some really awesome-looking cafe chairs, I can't sit on them.
Whether
they're just wood or cement or
yes, so yes.
Everything in my house is padded.
Yes.
Mm.
My butt, including my shower chair.
Yep.
I still have a lot of problems with that. And sitting for long periods on a plane, I have peripheral neuropathy or no pain in my remaining foot.
Mm.
That flares up or my joints get angry at me for not, I suppose, for dehydrating myself because I don't have a catheter or anything like that.
Yes.
So I need to go to the loo.
Yep.
And to prevent that, I just don't drink water.
Yep.
Yes.
And so my body's a bit of a mess by the time I finished flying. And Melbourne is about my limit, I think.
Yes.
So 3 hours on a plane and then I'm not much of a happy camper. So
yep.
We try and go to Singapore once, but once again that didn't work too well. So we have been to America, but it was a living hell. So
yeah,
I'll go back there because I have family and friends, but over there. But I don't know if that'll be happening anytime soon because I need a flatbed to.
Yeah, Qantas need to give you first class.
Yeah, they do. First class, lie down.
That's what they need to give you. And maybe. Yeah, this is very clear.
it's not a result of wanting free champagne.
No.
I'd
love the aisle if they let me, seriously.
Yes.
I just need to be able to stretch myself out
or even
roll myself over on both sides. But what I did discover in my last or my only trip to America was that I think it's Air New Zealand have this thing called the Sky Couch or something like that. Like, your other listeners might be interested to know who have kids who need the extra room because you basically have to be a kid to fit in it.
Mm.
They add these attachment things to the chair that basically makes it like a double-sized bed.
Oh.
Find this really, really poorly. Please do that.
We can look it up.
People can Google it.
do have a look if there's peas out there who are looking for other ways to travel who might need some additional help with restrictions for movement and everything. Mm. But that's the only reason or the only way we could get over to there. I'm nearly 6 foot tall, so for me it wasn't great.
No.
I still had to curl myself up, and you can't curl up prosthetic legs, so.
No.
Fabulous.
Yeah, no, you definitely, you can't even go business. You have to go first.
Yeah.
This is what we're telling the world.
How do you put the prosthetic leg on every day?
I do. Every morning I get up and get dressed, put my leg on, and then take it off when I go to sleep. And I've done speaking to little kids before, and they ask, what do you do with your leg when you have a shower? I'm like, well, you don't need to take your shoes off for a shower and to go to bed. I do the same thing. I take one shoe off and my leg, and that's it. So it comes off only for sleeping and having a shower.
Yeah. Right. And does it cause you pain or discomfort, where it slots in?
Not generally. Okay. I don't have any phantom pain or anything like that, but I have developed like pressure injuries and things like that in the past from it perhaps not fitting correctly and kind of funny where I laugh about it anyway. But, women worry about putting on weight because they won't fit into their jeans. And
yes.
I worry about putting on weight because I won't fit into my freaking leg.
Yes.
That is very important.
That's right up there in targeted weight, worries.
Last time I did put on weight, I got a pressure injury from it. So
yeah, well, fair enough.
Yeah, it's.
I know that just through watching the girls with their AFOs. Every year we have to get new ones through all the growth.
Mm.
And then I was like, right, now we stop growing. this won't change. But then, yeah, COVID, relax, put on some weight, calf can't get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. You can't have sort of like your tracksuit day leg and then your other leg.
Yeah, you need that.
You need that. Yeah.
What about how do you buy shoes for your prosthetic? Can you buy two of, is it the same size as your other foot, or do you have to buy different sizes?
No, because my other foot has no toes, it's like a size 5. Yeah. And my prosthetic has a size 9.
Yep.
I just buy a size 9 and deal with the space in the front
do
of my.
Do you?
Yeah. So I don't wear open toed shoes because it would. Yeah, there's nothing there for them. So I tend to wear, boots and things like that.
Yeah.
Very recently, I haven't got it yet, so it's very, very exciting. I'm getting prosthetic toes.
Oh.
I'm excited.
Right. Tell us about them.
I've been wearing jeans and boots in the middle of Brisbane.
Oh, you'd be boiling.
I just do, and it's fucking hot.
Yes.
So I'm getting prosthetic toes, not for cosmetic reasons, because I really don't care what they look like, but just so I can wear open-toed shoes and they'll stay on my foot.
Yes.
I'm pretty excited about that. So my leg person, they have a proper name, but I call them a leg. They're making me some toes at the moment.
And so how does that go? Do they just, you put them on every day the same as your leg or?
Well, I won't wear them unless I'm wearing the open toe shoes.
Yeah, okay.
So I'll probably run to Kmart and grab some sandals. But I'm just thrilled that I can wear some normal shoes and be cool and not have to, I can't come, it'll be too hot.
Yes.
Shoes are such a big part of the disability world that the everyday person just do not understand.
No. I was a shoe fiend before. And I was so distraught at having to give up my shoe collection.
Yes.
I went home and gave them all to my sister.
I bet. You don't want to look at them. It reminds you. Yeah. Yep.
Mm. Oh, now you've written a book. Have you written a book? Am I making that up?
Yeah. No.
You were just looking at me like, no, I have not written a book.
Yeah, I'll take that one. So I did. The first one was called Does My Bum Look Big in This Ad? That was media literacy and body image. So I was talking to a lot of teenage girls at the time about body confidence and body image. And this was before I got more into disability advocacy and just talking to them about how, one, talking about disability a little bit, but speaking to them as, I suppose, as able-bodied kids, man, you can look different and be okay and still love your body. Mine's covered in scars and missing pieces, but it works, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I talked them through all of those things because turns out 17-year-old girls have quite a few hang-ups without disabilities.
Yes, they sure do. Mm. Yep.
So I'd always leave and then always be more questions and I'd never have enough time. So I put a little book together that basically was a behind-the-scenes look of my time in media, and this is how we edit photos and this is what we do to the photos. And so by the time you see them on your screen or in the magazine, back then there were magazines, the models, they don't even look like the models because we've edited them that much. And I wish someone had told me when I was 17 that those images aren't real. There's this crazy thing called Photoshop, because I'd look in back then Dolly magazine. My skin's not like that. I just had no clue. So that wasn't specifically about disability as such. But then I moved more into the advocacy space. But I do write and speak for disabled and non-disabled people. So a lot of my Instagram content, yes, is about my stories about disability or something, but I'll add that this isn't just a disability thing. Like it's relevant to everyone. Apply whatever is more relevant to your situation.
Yeah.
And was there a second book? Was that your first book? Have you got a second one?
Yeah. That's a basically a version for the boys.
Yeah. Oh, tell us about it.
Same.
The same, again, media literacy and body image, but more of a focus on the muscles and things. The boys and those sorts of things, because there wasn't there was some really great recent stuff out there from academics and people like that, but there was nothing written for the young people themselves. So I don't talk about the book much these days because it's old. Magazines and
things change so quickly, don't they?
But I do work with Beautiful Minds, speaking about young people, so anxiety, about anxiety and depression now, and still bring in a lot of those things about body confidence and body image, but make it applicable to scrolling through Instagram or what's on your feed or what's on the screen.
Well, it's been so great to talk to
you. Yeah, I think we should finish up, but we could talk to you forever. Yeah. Have we missed anything that you would love to tell the P Tribe?
I would love to make a big, big please call out to the P Tribe. There has to be somebody out there, if yourself or your partner, your friend, your neighbour, who is in a position to help create change. So we can all advocate all day, every day on Facebook, Twitter, wherever the fuck we do it. But at the end of the day, it's those decision makers, the brand managers, the creative directors, those sorts of people who are making the decisions about what talent goes into management. And it's the awesome brand manager at Target or whoever does their advertising who made the decision to say, hey, let's do this. We need more people like that, and there have to be some P's out there who know people who know people.
Oh, there definitely is.
Definitely. Come on.
Get in touch with me and I'll help get you in touch with some people who might know more than me about it. But advocacy is only one part of it. It's being able to work with those decision makers and really educate them in a way that make sense to them in a way they understand. So hopefully there are some peas out there who might be able to help me with that.
Definitely.
Yep. They will. Come on, the peas never let us down.
They're the best group of people ever.
They are the best group of people ever. Thank you for being a part of our show.
Yes,
giving
thank
up your
you,
morning
Lisa.
For us.
Yes, we have been lovely to meet you and hear a little bit about your story. You could probably have your own podcast, hey?
Yeah, you probably definitely could.
You probably definitely could. So, yep, if you do one day, let us know.
Yeah, that's right. And if we ever get to Brisbane, if these borders open up,
yes,
we will come and say hi.
Come and drink coffee with me.
Oh, we'd 100% love to.
We'd love to.
Thank you. Wasn't she gorgeous?
Oh, she's beautiful. And she's beautiful inside and out, Peas.
Yes.
You know, not that appearance matters, but she is stunning.
Yes, she is.
And she's just kind.
And she's been supportive of us.
So supportive of us. Yeah. She's lovely.
Particularly when we had some criticism.
Yeah, she was lovely.
She came in and said, she was kind to us.
Yeah, she's really lovely. So I've fangirled her for a while, so I'm quite excited to actually virtually meet, because we never get to meet anybody anymore.
Know.
Thank you, COVID.
Aww.
Anyway, what I wanted to say before we do our Cry Laugh Difference,
yes,
I thought I might start this new segment where I read some of the comments from the people who've given us money through the supporter.
Oh, great.
Yep. So
good idea.
I can go back through them, but this one's topical if you've listened to any of the episodes this year.
Uh-huh.
The first one is from Erin. And she's given us $10 to buy trees to offset our paper diaries.
Thank you. So we will buy trees.
Manny and I will go to Bunnings.
I will.
And we will buy the same little plant. And
oh, that's very cute. Sorry. All right. That's the best.
The amount of laughs that we had from the last speak pipe that we put out, I can't even tell you. People absolutely loved that episode.
I listened to it again. I was just laughing so
when I
hard.
Was listening through for the show notes, I just was I thought the UPs are so funny.
I know. We need more speak
pipes.
We
love those. And Kate, who has a great name, obviously, she gave us a lovely donation and just wrote Gorman dresses.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Really? So,
yeah.
Oh, that's really nice.
And there's lots of anonymous donations. And we love you. And I completely understand the need to not put your name there. I will read all sorts of ones, but I just thought, oh, I'll let people know the cute things that people write.
I would buy in the supporter. Yeah.
Mandy's already, she's gone. See ya. Oh. I'll have to do cry laugh difference on my own.
Well, it's a big deal for me to even sort of
consider.
I just haven't been like that.
No, no.
15, 16 years to be able to just go, oh, I'll just buy that dress. Never. Yeah.
No, never. So thank you for your generosity.
Yeah.
And all of the rest of you, remember, it is going to fund our beautiful booklet,
that's
which
right.
will
which
be coming
final,
out. It's in its very final.
Kelly is just finally tweaking it all.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, things
We've
like this take
changes.
Time.
Yeah, and there's just like how does the page look and this page look to that one.
Yes, and has everyone got the right amount of photos? And,
that's right. So don't worry, it's coming.
It's coming. Anyway, so cry laugh difference. This week I cried. I went to a wedding, and when the speeches were done, the son talking about his father and if I could be half the man you are and I just love you. And he couldn't speak, the son.
Oh.
He just choked up the whole way through. And to see a 31-year-old man love his dad so desperately was.
Goodness.
Oh, you couldn't. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. And also just seeing the sound engineer, his beautiful girlfriend, they look so beautiful.
They
and
did.
You're just so, you know, you just have those little moments of, wow.
That's my son.
That's my son, yeah.
So who's listening right now?
Yeah, he's listening.
He looks so handsome in the photos.
Yes, what made you cry this week, Mandy?
I cried watching This Is Us again. anyway, no one else cares about me watching This Is Us, but I cried. But I also cried listening to one of my all-time favourite podcasts, Terrible Thanks for Asking.
Oh, yeah, and I haven't listened for a while.
Yeah, so she had an episode where people were just truth-telling, like pandemic. And it was a lot of peas.
Really?
Because generally that podcast is about talking about grief in terms of death.
Yes, it is.
And so she was just did a call out, how is everybody?
Because America's parts of America have been locked down for a year.
And how is everybody and how are people who are carers and doing caring, all different types of caring.
With no support.
But basically the entire episode was peace, right?
Wow.
And I was just howling in the car, just thinking, you know, just listening to the truth.
Yes.
Because it's like the speak pipe.
Yes.
It's people doing that as well. So you just listening to people's
have to
truths.
Listen.
Yes.
We'll link it in the show notes and you can
It was very moving and I just credit Nora McInerney.
Oh, yeah, she's amazing.
Because she was the first, it was the first podcast that I thought, wow. I mean, it wasn't my people, but it was talking,
it was
truth-telling in a podcast.
Telling. Yes.
And, I mean, we're not as clever as her. She's got big media behind her.
Yes, she's amazing.
But it was letting people tell their real-life stories.
Yeah.
So I love her. I love Terrible Thanks for Asking.
Yeah, I love it too.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, and my Make a Difference this week, even though this sounds like a ridiculous thing, is we've got a puppy.
Yes, all of a sudden.
Well, we've had our name down for a while and then we, you know, pandemic, everyone wanted dogs. Now pandemic's finished, people not so keen. So we got one. And she's just little Maisie and she's so cute. And, you know, of course she's pooing and weeing everywhere. But when we got our, my beautiful Bindi that I love very much, who's 12, the boys were three.
Yes, I don't remember.
And my life was absolute chaos. I think it was peak chaos and running kids to all after school activities. And I can't even remember. I didn't have fun with her either because I was so
busy. It
would have
been so much
work. I was just coping and surviving. And so this little one, just like my mum's come down a few days to just play with her and dog sit and my nephew's written a huge essay to his mum and dad about why he wants a little dog because they've got a big dog. And anyway, she's just this little chocolate brown ball of fluff. And don't at me for not rescuing. I 100% would rescue. I'm very allergic and I can't have anything that sheds. So I have to have some poodle in there.
Yeah.
So, which I did go to Comedy Republic the other night and they had this amazing comedian and she said, "What is it with Melbourne? Every single dog's curly."
There's a lot of cavoodles.
I was like, there's a lot of spoodles and oodles and groodles out there.
There is, so me anyway, included.
What was your difference?
Well, we had our SSG this week, which is student support group. Mm. So when you've got a child with a disability, either in mainstream or special schools, you have these meetings every term with the teacher. Now, we hadn't met Molly's new teacher. It's the first time she's had a man.
Oh, yeah.
And so we did it over Zoom, and he was a delight.
Yay for Peaches.
Oh, my gosh. And it was just, yeah, Darren and I were there, Molly in the middle of us, you know, and it just, he already knows her after a couple of weeks. He picked up some stuff that was true. He was, oh, just the ultimate special school teacher.
Yeah,
he was
awesome.
Lovely and funny. And, you know, I said, oh, when she goes on school camp, she'll just need a bit of a hand doing her hair. And he's bald, and he goes, well, it won't be me. But, you know, just fun. He tells a joke. He tells three jokes every morning.
Oh,
so she told me that's how they start the day. Oh. So this was part of my laugh too, because Darren goes, I think all bosses need to start the day with three jokes.
I agree, Darren.
Don't you agree? Yeah. So he's like, I think, you know, you imagine you're in a big Zoom with everyone from the NAB, and the CEO goes, right, okay, good morning. But anyway, let's start with my three jokes.
Did you hear about the zoo with only one dog? It's a shih tzu.
Anyway, we said to the teacher, we love that idea. And he said, well, it brings everyone happiness to start the day with
and
jokes.
That's what we want.
So afterwards, oh, this is going to make me cry too, but afterwards I gave her a big cuddle and I said, oh, I really like your teacher. Mm. And she said, I'm so happy at school, I can't even close my mouth.
Oh, baby girl.
She's
so beautiful. Yes. And I mean, this is what the difference a teacher can make.
I know.
That is a profound statement
from
her.
I'm so happy at school. I can't even close my mouth.
I love her.
I know. She just says the most beautiful things.
She really, really does.
Oh, my goodness. So that made a huge difference.
Huge difference.
And then I felt like I could go out to the rest of the family and say, wow, she's got a great teacher.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't like sometimes like at special schools you feel like they're in a lesser place.
Yes.
I don't feel like that.
No, she's not. It's awesome.
No, no.
Yep. And do you so I've got two laughs this week, if that's okay. My first laugh is, if you've listened to the Snap Pea, that will have made you laugh.
Yep.
But there's a story in there about a mix-up about marijuana drugs,
yes,
right? Anyway, our beautiful friend Jenny, Mandina, friend Jenny, and she has a new grandson. I'm probably going to pronounce his name wrong, but I think it's Etienne.
Yep.
They're French.
Yep.
And so she was getting a charm bracelet or something engraved and was trying to explain to the man she wanted an E with the little, oh, I'm going to show my ignorance. What's it called? I know people are just punching the
what? I don't know.
On the top of the E, the little line.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do know. Anyway, I'm very sorry, but good for all of you who guessed and yelled it at me.
The accent.
Yes. But
is that what it's called?
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. So anyway, she said she's just took her a long time to get this through. Anyway, and she says as she's walking out, she's walking past this guy and he's like covered in tats and a really big bloke. And she goes, I just wanted an E. And he goes, you better be careful what you say that, lady. So she was like, oh, I see your drug story. I raised you on. So feel free to, we'll do our talkback session on when have you accidentally, people thought you had drugs. Not really. And the other thing that made me laugh was, this isn't making me laugh, I actually feel sad about it, but scholarship's thinking of having a gap year out of home, which will be brutal for me because she does all my tech. No.
Yes, she does.
Number one daughter does a lot of tech too. Yeah. And also because I love her, obviously. But I was telling Buzz and Woody, I said, oh, scholarship's thinking of, because they were going to go to Europe, right?
Yeah.
You know, the whole 3 or 4 months overseas, can't do it. So her and her two besties are like, let's move out for a year. Just have it in as an adventure. We can't afford to
give
do it forever.
It a go.
They've been saving all their money anyway.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, going and looking at rentals and anyway, and I was telling Buzz and Woody and they were just like mouth open staring at me. I'm like, what? And like, what? Why would she want to leave this family? There's so many great people here and we're all fun. I was just laughing. I was like, mate, there's good reasons why. She wants to leave.
We're all fun.
We're all fun.
It's true.
Just, they can't. They just kept asking me, "What do you mean?
She's gonna move out."
I just don't think it's in their.
Sad.
Oh, they weren't happy. No, not happy. Just not in their comprehension.
Yes.
That she would want to go. I think they think you have to leave home. Anyway, they must like it here, so
they
that's nice.
Must.
Yeah.
Mine was from a Facebook page. A local group. I'm not going to read the person's name, obviously, but yeah. I don't know if I was tired, but I could not stop laughing. So the person says, "Hi, my name is Beep,
yep.
and I'm Beep years old, and I'm currently studying, but looking for some extra cash. I can walk your dogs or bog sit overnight." For a few days. And people were like, "How much do you charge to babysit my bog?" Which some people would call a poo.
Yes, outside of Australia, yeah, a bog. Or even the, "I'm going to the bog," which means you're going to the toilet.
There was just so many comments. They're like, "You should change that, you should change that."
Did they change it?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
The bog's still
but
there.
I can bog sit overnight. I don't know why, but I could not stop laughing.
That was pretty funny.
I know, it was pretty funny. Oh, dear. Oh, autocorrect.
Thanks for being here with us today again, Peas. Thank you for all the messages, the speak pipes.
Yeah, there's new reviews.
The likes on Instagram.
Thank you.
We absolutely love it. Our Facebook page is back.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. We got taken down
by
the government.
Taken down by the news. Well, by Facebook.
By Facebook. Yeah. They took it down.
How in any universe are we
news? We news. You know, news. But it was like in the beginning I thought, anything. Oh, this is funny. And then after a week or so I was
it's
not coming back.
No.
And we're middle-aged women. We're sort of in the Facebook demographic.
Yes,
you know?
We are. That's right.
So
the kids don't use it.
No, but we have been groomed to use it for the last 16 years. So
and a lot of our people are on there.
That's right.
Thankfully the Hangout remained.
Yeah.
But yes, we put our new apps up there. It gets good traction. So
yeah, and we can share stuff. So anyway, it's back. We went to our local MP. Thank you to our beautiful listener, Ariel, who said to me, "You can go to your local MP about this."
And it worked.
I wrote, I emailed them back and I said, "Well, lo and behold." Like a 90-year-old woman. I was like, "I am stunned."
I know.
And she's like, "No, that's what your local MPs are there for."
Amazing.
And I was like, "Okay, I never asked for anything."
No.
Anyway, it's back.
It's back. So I don't know if you missed it, but it's back.
We also, I know people are going to add us. We can't just rely on Facebook.
No. We do have a
the
website.
The podcast is still here. We do have a website.
And the podcast, thankfully, too lovely, Andrea gets loaded up every week on there.
Yeah, that's right. So
if you ever
we'll
lose
always
us,
be there. If you can't find us, if Instagram goes or whatever.
Yeah, we've got the 2P's website.
Just go to the website and we'll get our crap together and it'll be, yeah.
Yeah, we will maybe.
But, you know, but we can't make an app like Mamma Mia or anything.
Oh,
like,
no, we can't.
It's just like, okay, now we've got an app.
I know,
I was like, wow.
Well, that's a lot of money.
Amazing.
And you're very smart.
Yeah, very smart.
And thank you to our supporters, even though we've spoken about you. Please go rate and review.
Yes.
Makes a huge difference to tick those little 5 stars and it gets us in the charts and then other people find us.
Yep. So let us know what you thought about Lisa and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.